Right now, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Of course, Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast Arthur during the week and also on the weekend. And he joins us right now. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, and Happy New Year to those who are celebrating the Jewish New Year of 5780. Sounds old, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. All of a sudden, 66 doesn't sound so old.
Anyway, so I have become obsessed with bran muffins. As I mentioned last week, this is going to be a footnote to last week to start. One of the best things to eat on the Queen Mary II were bran muffins, and we looked forward to our bran muffins in the morning, and not only because they were delicious, but because they did the job that they're meant to do. And came home, and I said, all right, we have to continue with the bran muffins. I go to my go-to book, which is the Fanny Farmer Baking Book, written by Marion Cunningham. And I went out and bought the essential ingredient, which is bran, and find that on the back of the Bob's Mill Red Mill package, there is a bran muffin recipe that actually looked a little bit more, let's say, healthy than the bran muffin recipe in Fanny Farmer. Not to say that the bran muffin in Fanny Farmer is not good for you, but it does have more sugar and more fat than the Bob's Mill. So I made the Bob's Mill in several ways now. First, I made it half molasses and half honey, and they were good. I thought they were very good. Then I was out of molasses, so I made all honey, which we thought were actually better, but I didn't taste the honey enough. And as I said last week, I thought this would be a good substitute for the traditional Rosh Hashanah honey cake, honey bran muffins. But next time I make them with all honey and no part molasses, I'm going to use a very strong flavored honey. My regular pantry honey is orange clover and orange, whatever, it's honey. It's very mild honey. Golden Blossom is the brand that I buy because my grandmother bought it, my mother bought it, so I'm buying it. You know how that goes. Anyway, it's good honey. I like Golden Blossom, but I would use a stronger flavored honey. Then I made them a third time, this time with only molasses. By the time I'd gotten to the honey ones, I'd run out of molasses. So I bought molasses, and I sent Bob to the market for the molasses, and he came home with designer molasses, meaning organic and who knows what else. So expensive molasses. Molasses is pretty cheap. We had the 100% molasses ones. Got to say, when they came out of the oven, and when they were still warm, they were very, very molasses-y, and Bob couldn't even eat one. But the next day, they were better because the flavor toned down somewhat. They're still very molasses-y. So now I've decided I finally got to make the ones that are in Marion Cunningham's Fanny Farmer book. And so I did, and in fact, there is one right in front of me that I'm going to eat as soon as I get off the air because I don't want my mouth full while I'm talking. And they're very, very good. They have a lot more bran than the... it's interesting because Bob's Red Mill, I'm sure they're trying to sell bran. But their dozen cup muffins only call for a cup of bran. Whereas the Fanny Farmer have 2.5 cups of bran with about the same amount of whole wheat flour. Let me give you the recipe because these came out really, really good. And this may be, in fact, my go-to muffin. 2.5 cups of bran. It's just wheat bran. And a bag of wheat, Bob's Mill wheat bran contains enough to make, I think, 2 batches of these muffins because 2.5 cups is a lot of bran. And I think the bag holds just about 5 cups. So you got about $1.25 worth of bran. 1 1/3 cups of whole wheat flour. And now the sugar. 1/4 cup of brown sugar. It's not a lot of sugar. This recipe says that it makes 16 muffins. but I only made 12 with it. And I'll tell you why in a minute. So my brown sugar, by the way, was long gone. It was like a rock. And for those of you who don't know this trick, you can soften hardened brown sugar in the microwave. My quarter of a cup, I sort of eyeballed, because I had to chip away at the rock. And I chipped away, and I eyeballed about a quarter of a cup. And then I put it on a plate in the microwave, and it took only about 45 seconds in the microwave to get soft. I think if I did it a whole minute, it might be too hot to handle. So I don't know, 45 seconds seems to be a good amount for a quarter of a cup. You mix that in with the bran and the flour, and now you've got sugar. A half a teaspoon of salt. If you're on a low-sodium regimen, you can reduce that to a quarter of a teaspoon, or in fact, none, if you really want none. And it doesn't have any effect on the rising or anything like that. The leavening here is baking soda, not baking powder. Baking soda, 2.5 teaspoons of baking soda. And that's your dry ingredients. You know, when you make muffins, this is what you do. You assemble all your dry ingredients in one bowl, and you assemble all your liquid ingredients in another bowl, and then you add one bowl to the other. So, in addition to, so I mix all that up: bran, whole wheat flour, some brown sugar, salt, baking soda, you know, with a spoon, just stir it up. And then add raisins, 1 cup of raisins. Do be careful. Raisins tend to stick to each other. So as you add them to the bowl, be sure they're all separated. You know, break up any clumps of raisins. And then stir the raisins into the dry ingredients until all the raisins are coated with dryness. I did not add any walnuts to this, but you could. The recipe doesn't call for it, but I would add as much as a half a cup, a quarter of a cup to a half a cup of coarsely chopped walnuts. And here are your wet ingredients. 2 eggs, 1 cup of buttermilk. Now, when you have buttermilk and baking soda together, that's what causes the leavening. The baking soda is a base, and the buttermilk is acid, and together they react, and they make some carbon dioxide, and that's what rises your muffins. 1/2 cup of vegetable oil. That's significantly more than the healthy muffins from Bob's Red Mill. This does have vegetable oil. Now, I measure out the vegetable oil and pour it into the bowl with the buttermilk, 2 eggs lightly beaten. And then I measure out my molasses and honey, because now my measuring cup, I use a glass measuring cup for this, the measuring cup is coated with the oil that you first measured in it, and so the molasses and the honey will easily pour out. It's 1/3 cup of molasses and 1/3 cup of honey. This is any honey, because really the main flavor here is, I think, the molasses. And they're ever so slightly sweet. So you mix all up your wet ingredients, you pour them into the dry ingredients, and I made only 12 muffins, filling my muffin tins to the brim. Because, as we mentioned last week, everybody loves a muffin top. And when you bake these muffins as they tell you to, only filling 2/3 full, you end up with a nice muffin, but no mushroomy, crispy edge top. So I say mushroom, it's the shape of a mushroom. And so I filled them up. They exactly fill up 12 standard muffin tins. And they get baked at 425, which is a little hotter than the other muffins. 425. I baked mine for 15 minutes, as the recipe indicates, but next time I'm going to bake them a little longer, because the 15-minute baking time is for 16 muffins, meaning smaller muffins. Now, mine came out great at 15 minutes, but the biggest one was still a little bit moist in the center. So, and the edges were not quite as crispy as I would like them. So the next time I'm going to leave them in a few minutes longer, maybe as long as 20 minutes, but certainly no longer than 20 minutes is necessary. Now, I well butter my muffin pan because I want them to come out easily. I don't want to break them up when they come out. My muffin tin is, in theory, no stick, but it's only in theory, so I do butter them. If you don't want to put butter in the pan because you're whatever reason, you can use some vegetable oil and just sort of grease up the pans. But truthfully, butter is better because it sticks. Well, margarine, if you want to be a kosher and not have any dairy product in these otherwise... Well, there is. I'm sorry. There's buttermilk in these, so forget it what I said. Butter. Use butter.
Forget it.
And they come out super easy. Super, super easy. I left my... We've been eating these for 2 days now, even though I brought some to my cousin yesterday. But I'm still eating them, but I left them in the muffin tin. They have stayed fresh for 2 days. Really. For 2 days inside the muffin tin. If you don't want to just store it that way, take them out when they're fully cool, and they freeze perfectly. I've already tried it. They freeze great. And the other night I wanted one, and it wasn't quite defrosted in time, and the center was still frozen. You know what? It was good.
Huh.
It's like when you can't resist eating the cake that's in the freezer, and you say, oh, I'm going to eat it frozen. Well, I ate... just the center was still hard, but they were really, really good. These are really good muffins. I can always depend on the Fanny Farmer cookbook for that.
Now, I have a question. I have a question. Since I have been listening to this, what my mother would have said is, did you call up the Queen Mary and find out the recipe?
The answer is no, I did not. And I'm sure that I would get something. But it's going to be, you know, for 1,000 muffins, a recipe for 1,000 muffins.
So I thought, well, I won't ask Marshall. I won't ask Arthur. I will just look up Queen Mary brand muffin recipe.
Oh, and what'd you find?
What I found is the Holland America Line's brand muffin recipe, the Princess Cruises brand muffin recipe. What I really found was that people... apparently go on these cruises and have the best brand muffins and want the recipes.
Well, it's only in comparison to the other foods.
Exactly. I understand.
Yeah. So I got used to their scrambled eggs in the morning, but they're not my scrambled eggs. But I got used to them. And then I discovered the brand muffin, and that was good. So I had a good breakfast every day.
How were the scrambled eggs
but
different?
After that, it was never... you never knew.
I understand.
On all these ships, you have the dining room, and on the Queen Mary II, which is a Cunard English line, they're very, very class conscious, as are the English. And so there are actually three dining rooms. There's the Queen's Grill, so if you're super fancy and snobby, and you can afford the most expensive penthouse suite, you get the Queen's Grill. Which looked like no fun. I didn't eat there, but it didn't look like any fun.
Did you have to dress? Food.
Then there's the Princess Grill. That's one step down from, you know, that's if you have the next most expensive penthouse suite. And then there's the dining room where everybody else eats. I don't even remember the name of it. It's an enormous, enormous dining room with a mezzanine floor. And there are two seatings in it, and... yeah, sometimes there's good food there, but mostly you got to be very careful.
You know, it's funny, Arthur.
And as Bob said, the portions are so small that you're afraid you're going to leave the dining room hungry. To give you an example, I thought this was safe. It ends up it wasn't. One night I ordered prosciutto and figs. I thought, how can they ruin prosciutto and figs? Well, they had done something to the figs, like pickle them, that made them really horrible. And they gave me one paper-thin slice of prosciutto, and it was all drizzled with a balsamic vinegar glaze. So there's how you ruin a piece of ham with a fig.
You know, Arthur, when I went on the Queen Elizabeth two times, I led a tour. So they let me. I was in the middle. I was
what
in
ship
the
is this? I'm sorry.
The Queen Elizabeth II. I did two tours where I bought 50 people along each time. Okay, to Bermuda.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And they let me eat in that middle dining room.
The Princess Grill.
Yeah, the middle one.
Yeah.
And I totally did things I should have never done at the Princess Grill. But, I mean, like, I would order...
My first
night there, I ordered steak for dinner, right?
Yeah.
And halfway through the steak, because at that time I was 420 pounds, I said to them, you know, I'd like surf and turf. Can I get a lobster? They bought me out a lobster.
Well, I tried steak. I thought, you know, this is going to... I thought I was really had this down before I left, but... I ordered steak three times. The first time I ordered medium rare and it came out medium well. The next time it came out well done and was so hard that I couldn't even cut it with a steak knife.
Amazing.
And I sent that one back and I said, look, this is well done. I want it medium rare. And the third one was literally a raw steak that had been put on the grill for 20 seconds on either side. So barely even had color on the outside. And that, I thought, was just to get back at me.
Yeah,
I thought they were being vindictive. I got really angry about the raw steak. But, you know, it was hit and miss. And I by the end of the trip, I sort of figured out what you could get and what you couldn't get. But then there's a buffet. And there were many a night I went to the buffet because at least you can eyeball it first and see blah, blah, blah. And you don't leave hungry if you don't want to. And because there were so many, you know, it's interesting. They were mostly the Asians. I was going to say there were so many Asians on the ship. I thought it was mostly Japanese at first because they did have sushi and sashimi at the buffet at every meal. They also had a lot of smoked fish at every meal. But it ends up, the Asians were mostly Chinese and many, many from Hong Kong. So I don't know. I guess maybe Hong Kong people are eating sushi also, not just Japanese people. So anyway, that was that. There was that dining room. And then there was another place called the Veranda, which is you pay extra. It was interesting. On the way to Quebec, this cruise went from Brooklyn to Quebec and back. On the way to Quebec, it was $39 extra to eat in the Veranda. On the way home, it was $49 extra. They'd raised the price $10 on the round trip.
That's because they knew you guys were fleeing to that restaurant, so they wanted to charge you.
Well,
that's right.
I never went to the Veranda because the report I got from somebody who I bonded with on this trip was that it was the same bad steak that they had in the dining room, although they charged you $50 extra. So I didn't do that. I decided that was a waste of time. And plus, you have to dress. Now, I'm not big on getting dressed up.
Yeah, you're right.
And on
yeah.
this cruise, there were, I don't know, three, four nights probably where you had to wear a tuxedo. And I did it the first night. And then I decided, I don't want to do this anymore. So we went to the buffet on the nights that you had to dress up because we didn't have to dress up at the buffet.
Yeah, I had to dress up.
So moving on from Bran Muffins, which is where this all started, because it's my job, I went to Burger King this week and tried an Impossible Burger. We all know about Impossible Burgers.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, yes, we do.
I didn't know until I looked it up. Of course, it's made with soy protein. And the Impossible Burger, I think has just been introduced into supermarkets. You can buy it even in the so-called meat in bulk and make your own burgers. But it was first introduced, as far as I know, at Burger King. Actually, Burger King in St. Louis. Keep meaning to ask my niece, but she never takes her kids to fast food places, so she may know nothing about this. But anyway, the Burger King that I go to, or on rare occasion, I don't like fast food, period. Not even the fries. The fries, once they cool down, which is instantly, are terrible. I tested this the other day because we went to one of our favorite places for a burger in the neighborhood, although I don't eat a burger there, Bob does. And those fries, at the end of his meal, where he didn't finish his fries, the fries were just as good as they were when they were hot. So it doesn't mean that every fry has to turn into cardboard. Anyway, the Impossible Burger, I can see why people like it because the Impossible Whopper tastes just like a regular Whopper. Mainly you taste lettuce, tomato, onion, pickle, mayonnaise, and ketchup. I mean, it's all about all the condiments that are on it. and dressings that are on it. It's not about the actual burger. So it's the same with the Impossible Burger. If you're serious about being a vegetarian or vegan, I guess that's for you. But I think if you're serious about being a vegetarian or a vegan, you don't really go to a fast food restaurant to eat.
No,
maybe
you
I'm
buy
wrong.
You buy it in a store. But this is where it gets, you know, it gets wobbly because, how do you feel as a vegan or vegetarian about GMO stuff? How do you feel about the ultra-processed, if you don't eat processed
stuff? Well, that's
it.
These Impossible Burgers are a highly processed food made from, I understand, the root of the soy plant, which has a meaty quality to it. Not sure what makes it meaty, but it's a very highly processed product. And I would rather eat some good meat.
But
I have to add that if you are indeed vegan, for whatever reason, you should make sure that your Impossible Burger has no mayonnaise, because mayonnaise is made with eggs, so it's not vegan. So you have to leave off the mayo on your Impossible Whopper. And by the way, the Impossible Whopper costs a dollar more than the regular beef burger. And this, I thought, was strange. If you get it as a meal, you know, with fries and a drink, it's $2 more instead of just $1 more. I don't understand why they charge you extra dollar for the same fries and the same drink, but they do. So it's like it ends up being like almost $10 to get an Impossible Whopper meal at Burger King. And I, for my $10, I can get a lot better food than that. Even for my $8, I can get a lot better food than that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's it's complicated because you've spent a lot of time trying to convey to people that eating ultra processed stuff might not be the best for your body. And
yeah, you know, just when I used to teach people how to shop, I haven't done this in a while, but nothing has changed in my whole lifetime. You shop at the edge of the supermarket. That's where the produce is, fruit and vegetables. That's where the dairy products generally are. That's where the meat and poultry are. If your market has fish, that's where that's going to be, at the outer edge of the supermarket. There's almost no need to go into the aisles. I go into the pasta aisle. I go into the canned tomatoes and bean aisle. By the way, I don't know about you, but Goya beans are on serious markdown here in Brooklyn. A dollar a can for almost any Goya bean. So if you're a big bean person, as we are here, stock up. Anyway, the aisle and bread, of course, is usually down one of the aisles. So the aisles contain processed foods, in essence. Maybe minimally processed, like a canned tomato or canned beans, but also all the bad stuff is in the aisles. So if you just shop the outer aisle, the outer rim of a supermarket, that's where all the fresh food is. That's where you don't have to worry about it being heavily processed food.
Right, and, you know, I it's probably... Marshall saying 4 minutes. 4 minutes, sir. 4 minutes, Mr. Whiteside.
Time flies when you're having fun.
It really does. But it probably isn't a bad idea to hark back to a couple of those fundamentals, essentially. It's like shop the aisle. I watch people run in to grab a coffee or a something on the way to work to the convenience stores. And what they end up grabbing is not necessarily, again, as healthy, a healthy lunch as a meal starter as you could.
I don't know. Don't most people just grab a roll or a donut or something like that, a Danish?
No, they grab things that have handwritten and say all natural on them and that are just absolutely...
Oh.
Diabolical.
Well,
my new favorite word. How's that brand muffin?
All natural is misleading.
How is that brand muffin?
Oh, you can hear me. I couldn't resist it. I must say, I think they improved being left out in the muffin tin because the tops got crispier.
Right.
They dried out a little bit, which is good. And the bottom stayed super moist. So, you know, it's a lot of bran, but at my age, I need it.
Well, that I mean, obviously that.
I eat a high fiber diet to start. I can't do this on the air.
All right, well, so
one day off the air, I'll tell you about my recent procedure and how proud my doctor was of me.
All right, well, leaving everything and nothing to the imagination.
But his final words to me were, "Keep up the fiber."
Well, that's good. Keep up the fiber work. But
yeah, this is my gastroenterologist.
But don't
who
you
knew that I was. You know, my nephew is a cardiac anesthesiologist, and his wife is a doctor, too. So they're very medically oriented. But I said to Brian the other day, I said, who knew that I was going to have this long list of doctors when I get older? And he said, you know what? It's not so much a function of your age, but as a function of way medicine is today.
Right,
that everybody specializes. So you may have a primary care doctor who's like a conductor of the orchestra, but he sends you to an array of specialists. So I have an array of specialists. So I can say that my doctor, Dr. Notar Francesco, not an Hispanic name. I asked him about his name, his unusual name, Notar-Francesco. It ends up he's from the south of Italy. He's not, but his parents were from the south of Italy, and from a little town that I actually know, that nobody knows. And he was so excited that I knew his family town. We've become buddies. Anyway, he was the gastroenterologist who said on his way out the door, "Keep up the fiber."
Well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. All right, listen.
Yes. All right, so
Happy
I think
New Year.
My time is up, and I can finish eating my bran muffin.
Have
okay.
Have a great week.
You know, I'm very weak about these things, yes. It's sitting in front of me. I couldn't resist. While Jill was talking, I took a bite. Oh, and I didn't even get to brisket, which is I want. Being that it's the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, and a lot of people are making brisket, and I know a lot of people are going to be disappointed
with their brisket. I'll remind
you
next week
that my cousin Susan, who is a great, great cook, complained yesterday. We had a little family gathering. She complained yesterday that she can't make brisket anymore because it doesn't have enough fat. And I didn't complain last week, but my Guinness stew would have been much better had the meat had a little bit of fat in it. I bought Chuck the stew. It really was way too lean for stew. And she said, well, from now on, I'm not making brisket anymore. I'm only making flonkin.
Yeah, you really
have to. But even flonkin doesn't have enough fat anymore.
You have to look for fat, but I have found fatty pork chops. And on that note,
on the pork chops on Rosh Hashanah.
That's right.
We'll talk to you next week when it's all over.
Okay.
And then we can talk pork. Great.
Okay.
Okay. Have a great week and Happy New Year to all.
All right.
Thanks. Happy New Year to you guys.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com on the web. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.